Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is sports handicapper Aaron Renning, also known as ER. We'll be talking to ER in a few minutes. I got some emails from Munchkin this week about Caesars Entertainment and Total Rewards. What was that all about, Richard?
Well, they're talking about, I don't exactly understand, divesting their Total Rewards program. So I was wondering if you were going to be busily cashing in whatever points you may have. You know, it seems to me there may be some danger of just losing your points.
All right.
So, are you?
The short answer is no. There's, it's all certainly possible that my strategy can turn out to be wrong, but I don't think any special action is necessary at this point. There's no doubt that Caesars Entertainment is in deep financial doo-doo, but I don't think it's going away. Not so long ago, they sold off a few properties to another entity that was at least partially still owned by Caesars, and I think that's what's probably happening here. Caesars could not survive if they eliminated Total Rewards. They could not survive if they broke these huge promises to their players. A lot of their business is driven by players hoping to obtain some sort of Total Rewards status or award. So Caesars might be sold, but the new owner will do something reasonable with their with the Total Rewards balances. So,
you hope.
Yeah, that's an educated guess, and I can certainly end up being wrong. That we have a 7-star trip every year, and I'm actually Buddy and I are using mine in December, which is we're hoping to go on a 2-week cruise, kind of to make up for the honeymoon that she was too sick to for us to go on. So
now, are you using all your points for that trip, or would you still have points?
I'm using no points for that trip. In addition to points, they have an annual trip if you're 7 stars. 7 stars is their highest level of player category. And so a 7-star trip, well, they'll take you to any other Caesars property in the country, fly you there with something like up to $1,200 airfare, give you however many nights you want, and $500 in food and certain other goodies.
So yeah. Now, aren't you basically laying 2-to-1 that they will, you know, honor their points at 100%? Right, because you could cash in your points at basically about half value, you know, by buying gas cards or something like that, right?
So, well, actually better than that. It's if you're it varies by your tier level, but at 7 stars you can get, at least in Las Vegas, up to $1,000 of, you can turn your points into $1,000 cash at a price of $1,250 of points. So, like, there's a 20% discount or 25%, depending on which end you're going to look at it from. So you can do it once a day. And so in my balance is probably between $4,000 and $5,000. So if I really thought it was in danger in 3 or 4 days, I could eliminate all of that at a 20% discount. But I don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
All right.
That makes sense.
You also sent me an email, Richard, about Wynn Resorts. and they're doing something with $3 that ticks you off.
You know, it's not just Wynn Resorts. It's all these Vegas joints have started nickel and diming the customers. And yeah, it just infuriates me. You know, you're supposed to be a valued guest, right? You have a comp at a hotel and you show up before 3 o'clock and they want to charge you an early check-in fee. And the places that were never going to have resort fees all now have resort fees. And it's just one fee after another. They have a late checkout, an early check-in, the resort fee. And now this particular fee, I guess I should give a shout out to VegasTripping.com. It's one of the websites I read. And, the guy was saying that he got charged a $3 fee for ordering a whiskey neat. Now, all that means is that he ordered the whiskey without ice cubes in it, and they charged him an extra $3 for not putting ice cubes in his drink. And I just think it's gotten to the point of ridiculousness. And at some point, I would think that, customers are going to revolt and say the hell with this. But I don't know. I just don't think it's the way to run a business,
Yeah.
And actually, that class that we both took that Dan Ariely taught on behavioral economics, they said in the class that people don't like paying lots of small fees. They would rather pay more money in one lump sum than get hit with these sort of nickel and dime fees. And I guess I certainly fall into that, category. It bugs me.
So you're not going to be ordering your whiskey neat at Wynn in the near future. Is that right?
That's right.
All right.
I'm a Scotch drinker anyway.
Well, I would think, do you ever drink neat Scotch?
No, I don't drink it neat.
All right. You drink it messy. All right. Now, let's introduce our guest. Aaron Renning is a sports handicapper, sports blogger, and radio personality who provides handicapping advice both for free and for a fee through his website, sportsmemo.com. He has done well in several handicapping contests. Aaron Renning, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you, guys, and don't forget sports better. I think that's what we'll be here to talk about. But again, thank you, Richard and Bob. I've read some of Richard's work. I'm familiar. Bob, I've read some of your stuff, and you helped me become certainly a better video poker player, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Now, there are several radio stations with sports news all the time. Richard and I are neither able to or directly trying to compete with them. We want tonight's interview to be about the science of betting sports more than at what price the Seattle Seahawks are a good bet to win next year's Super Bowl. So Aaron Renning, when did you start handicapping sports?
I would say back in grade school. I recall it was my father and I, we'd have a contest probably in late grade school where we'd go the NFL season and we'd pick to see who would have a better record against the spread in the NFL. And we'd carry that out. I remember I probably did that between, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. Again, not for money or anything. It was just for the entertainment purposes. And I made my first bet. I can remember my first bet, sports bet, in the seventh grade.
And with a bookie?
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct.
You going to give a shout out to your bookie's name? Never mind. All right. Now, presumably you have some kind of computerized model that takes into account several factors. So let's say you hear hypothetically, I just made this up, it isn't real, but hypothetically you heard LeBron James has a sore foot. And before that news come out, the Cleveland Cavaliers were favored by 4 points. Now, the information isn't very precise. You don't know for sure how bad a foot is, how it's going to affect his game. Now, would you avoid betting on the game, or how would you use that information to bet?
Yeah, I mean, the natural inkling right away, and I used to do a lot more of this in building my bankroll probably 5 to 10 years ago. You would just kind of take a shot. You would play against Cleveland and hope that he would be out. You'd get some line movement and you'd have an opportunity for a middle. I do things much differently now. I don't really get into middling. But, you know, that's a great chance where you're just trying to kind of day trade and bet both sides of a bet. It's a great way to build your bankroll. But now I'm just playing more with an edge. Actually, I'm kind of one of the last or maybe few guys. I do not use a computer model. I do make a number for every game. It's very tedious, a lot of work that I put into it. But I'm kind of the last of the generation where I use more feel, and I've gotten very good with numbers. I've introduced that probably more the last 3 or 4 years. So, but getting, you know, back to the original question, again, there's a lot of different ways you can do about it. But a lot of times, especially when you're dealing with like the flu or sickness, that information just doesn't really come into fruition, I guess is maybe the best way to put it.
So you mean the information doesn't actually turn out to be worthwhile, or it doesn't affect the game in the way that the general public thinks that it will?
Well, it all depends. I mean, you know, you can have a sore foot that, you know, a guy plays with for 2 or 3 weeks, or you can have sickness or the flu, which I've never been able to really profit from a lot of that. Maybe you, again, a guy's going to be out of the game, and you know you'll get some good line movement with that. So yeah, there's different ways to try to go about it, but a lot of times, yeah, you're just probably just going to bet it and try to get down on it.
Now, I first became aware of you because Michael Kaplan wrote an article for Cigar Aficionado where he basically said that you were the second biggest NBA bettor after Vulgaris, who I'm sure you're familiar with. And I also read an article about Vulgaris, who said that around 2004 or 5, he basically lost his edge and realized that he wasn't going to be able to beat the NBA anymore without building a computer model. And he went out and hired somebody and built a model. But you still find that you're able to beat the NBA and the NFL without using
the model? Again,
before you do this, Munchkin, we're having trouble hearing your audio. Are you away from your microphone or anything like that? But it's real fuzzy. If it doesn't improve soon, we're going to ask you to call in and do it by telephone because Skype doesn't appear to be working. All right, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, Aaron. You know, the premise to me isn't real, you know, how you come about your numbers, or if it's a computer model, or if you can somehow do it yourself. It's really just about making a good number, a side and a total on the game. So you have, you know, a buy price on all four sides, whether it be an over, you have a buy on the under, you have a buy price on the away team and the home team. So it's really just a matter of having a good number. I've come up with a way over the last 3 or 4 years where I think about a real good number. I mean, it's shown to be really profitable. I'm in action on, you know, NBA, I probably bet half the games, maybe a little bit more when I'm playing second halves. NFL, I've been able to come up with an edge on probably, on a 16-game card, I'll play 12 of the games, either side or a total. So it's really just becomes down to, and I kind of had the same epiphany probably about 4 or 5 years ago, where I needed to come up with, you know, making a good number on these games. And once you have the number, you know, that opens up a lot of different avenues for you.
I noticed that there have been a number of articles recently about prop bets in the NFL. Do you bet a lot of props?
I do not. I know guys who do that. You know, what's a little bit strange with me is, you know, I've been able to do very good at NBA and NFL, which are both big market things. Not a lot of guys are adept and do well with those big sports. So, you know, as far as getting down money on those things, it's really not a problem. You know, the thing you have with the props, A, yes, they're very easy to beat, but B, they can be certainly a more difficult time in getting down a pretty good amount of money on those.
Yeah, a lot of props are $200 or $500 each,
right,
or something. All right. Changing sports briefly. A few nights ago in baseball, the San Francisco Giants, who are very much alive in the playoff picture, were playing the Chicago Cubs, who are not alive in that picture. The game had a rain delay. The Chicago ground crew couldn't keep the car covering the field. They'd done right. So apparently the tarp hadn't been rolled up properly last time. The game went 4.5 innings. Cubs in front, 2-0. After 4.5 hours, they finally called the game. Cubs won. Giants lost. Sportsbook paid off accordingly. All right. A couple days later, today, actually going back, the Giants protested. Usually this is meaningless. Protests never win, except this one did. And so they decided to resume the game this afternoon, which they did. Now, now we know that the Giants scored one more run. It ended up 2-1 Cubs. So the sportsbook, who had paid off the club victory and paid off the under, no harm, no foul, everything happened. But it easily could have happened that the Giants scored a lot of runs, or the over came in, or the Giants won. What would the sportsbooks have done then after they'd already paid off these guys?
I think every sportsbook handles it differently. We've seen some examples of this in the past. I think it was, what was it, a couple years ago, we had that bizarre Packers-Seahawks Monday night game, or Sunday, I think it was a Monday night game, when it was the replacement referees, and it was just kind of a bizarre turn at the end of the game. Seattle covered officially, but the Packers felt that they were wronged in that game. And I think one of the sports books around town did pay out both sides of that bet. I have an example. This was probably about 5 years ago, and I had bet a college basketball total. Again, I had probably played this at about four or five places. And it landed. It was either a push or a win or a loss at all these places. But what happened after the game, I think one team kind of clinched something, so there was kind of chaos after the game, and there was a technical foul called, so there was one or two free throws shot. And everything was graded on the final, but then it wasn't graded until the next day, or they changed the score the next day when they added this point or two to the score. So I remember dealing with one sports book. They would not change it. It was official the previous night, which was in the rules. All they offered to do was, you know, give us a free lunch or something like that, I remember. I do recall it was another sports book that did change, and I think they gave us a push on it. So in this example, if it ever happens, I mean, obviously the protocol is to grade it on the day of the game, but should always save your ticket and go in and ask the supervisor if they can do anything for you. You know, if you're a good customer or client of that customer, I would think they would attempt to make it right, or else they'll, you know, like I said, they'll at least maybe try to do something for you.
Seems like you know, the basic strategy should be to cash your tickets as quickly as you can
on a winner, certainly on a winner.
Yeah. And if they refuse to pay something like that, I would also definitely call the gaming control board. You know, it's a free shot, and you know, I remember, you know, long ago having some horse racing you know, where the books didn't want to pay off some horse racing bets, you know, and basically the, you know, the gaming control came in and just told them, look, you know, you got to pay, you know,
right.
You're in the gambling business.
All right. Getting bets down is a major part of the game. Let's say you identify a point spread of 2 at one place and 3 another place across town. You can't be at the same at both places at the same time. Now, there are certain laws in Nevada that say it's under some conditions it's illegal for you to hire me to place those bets for you. Are there legal, intelligent ways around that particular law?
Yeah, it that is certainly an interesting situation, especially more so nowadays where numbers move so fast, where I could maybe go and play that too, and it could, you know, change a lot of numbers everywhere. It depends what exactly the book is or what have you. And for me, it would kind of depend, you know, what book would be higher in limits and what book would I not have any sorts of problems whatsoever. As far as I know, if you are a professional bettor, you can set up some type of corporation, and you know, you can have someone, as long as they're on their payroll or own some sort of that corporation, they can be out and partner up with you and go out and make bets for you. As far as I know, that's the last I had checked in on something like that.
That's correct. As long as they have an interest in itself.
All right, Richard, we're going to have Lawrence call you. We didn't hear that. Let me ask Aaron another question, and then Richard is going to can re-identify that question later. Now, sports radio has a number of pundits predicting games, including yourself. Whether we're talking about NBC, CBS, ESPN, Fox News, or whoever, sometimes these organizations get better information than the rest of us have. Which announcers or organizations, if any, do you find useful?
There's definitely useful things out there. A lot of the new sabermetric, which is using math and I think a more efficient way in some of the gambling numbers. I mean, I remember I was a subscriber to Baseball Prospectus years ago before anybody knew what it was, and now they've grown to be a big site, and I think they offer content now to ESPN. So there's a number of items like that. For me, it's funny because I moved to Las Vegas in 2002, and again, I grew up in a little town, Wisconsin. I'm all self-taught with what I'm able to do. So again, growing up in this little town, Wisconsin, I would read the Power Sweep or the Gold Sheet, stuff that you could get by mail, and I just kind of trial and error, I would improve myself as a handicapper. When I moved to Las Vegas in 2002, I'm like, wow, this is great. I'm going to turn on the radio. I'm going to hear all these handicappers. I'm going to read all these different articles in the newspaper. It was the worst year I've ever had with all these different opinions. What I found works for me is to really just trust myself, my own opinion. Now, with that said, I like to go in and, you know, like the local beat writers, a writer is following the Cleveland Cavaliers or a writer that's following the Denver Broncos, and you don't trust totally their opinion, but you trust their news and try to build up a feel for that team. And with that, you try to get what maybe a player is worth or isn't worth. So just a lot of different things like that. But more so than anything, for me, what works is just kind of staying on an island and solving my own problems and forming my own opinion.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple cities. There's, 32 NFL teams in 31 cities or something like that. Do you have favorite writers in each of those cities and in all the basketball cities and in all the hockey cities and in all the college football? That's a lot of favorite writers.
It is. And things have really changed with that, too. I mean, you know, in some cities you used to have two or three newspapers that would cover these teams. Now you're lucky to find one. You know, it's more ESPN writers or a lot of blog writers where a guy will just start up a blog and start to cover the Chicago Bulls, and there's some good information with that. So everything is just kind of ever evolving, and you just try to, for me, I try to take it in all. And right now I'm in the process of researching every NFL team, a ton of these college teams as well. So I'm just get in and I try to read as much as possible, and I enjoy that aspect of it. So really you're just trying to take in all the information you can.
How many hours a week do you spend researching and doing your handicapping?
Yeah, for
and
me,
watching games.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just about every waking hour. I put everything into this. I do not have a wife or kids or anything like that. I do have some family out here now, but I've sacrificed a lot to be as good as I can at this. And like I said, I'm a little bit old school in my process. I don't have a computer model per se, so it takes me a long time. I mean, right now I'm going through every NFL team, which is, 2 to 4 hours that I'll spend with every team, every college team, 1 to 2 hours. You just try to build up a feel, and I'm kind of using the last couple of years' numbers, and I'll tweak that. And then once the games start, I'll have an idea which way I'll maybe want to go with my numbers to, again, form what I feel is a pretty strong betting line. So, yeah, when you factor in the research, the watching games, trying to get a bet down, I mean, it is every waking hour. So and that's why I've used to be a 350-day-a-year guy. I used to do Major League Baseball, NFL, and NBA, which is, again, it's pretty much around the calendar. And then when those sports collide, it's crazy, all the hours you're trying to work. But I actually try to cut back. I'm just doing baseball now 2 or 3 months out of the year. So I actually had a little time off this summer.
Do you pay any attention as to who's going to be doing the refereeing on a particular game? Does that enter into your model at all?
Not really. I mean, you're aware of certain referees. I mean, you know, Joey Crawford used to have this NBA referee, used to have a thing against the Spurs, or he's a little bit more of an over referee. I've never found anything really good with that. NFL referees, there's nothing on that. Major League Baseball umpires, I mean, years ago, that was a pretty decent cash cow. They're still, you know, they've changed a lot of things, and they have more computerized systems, and these umpires are held to a little bit higher level now, so you don't see the discrepancies that I think you probably used to see 10 years ago. But there's definitely some umpires out there. And again, just the way things travel, information follows, and trends are easily found, a lot of this gets taken out of the market in a hurry than it used to be years ago.
Now, do you have trouble? I mean, you know, a lot of the big successful bettors, guys like Billy Walters or whatever, basically have the same problems that, you know, we table game players have, and that is they get backed off from places that won't allow them to bet anymore. So have you had these kind of problems? I mean, do you get backed off and shut down at places?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, I haven't really had any problems in Las Vegas, I guess. You know, that's one of the nice perks and one of the reasons why I continue to kind of stay in the media, because I think that helps. You know, the sportsbook managers know who I am, and, you know, they don't want to, you know, have any problems with someone who's in the media, I guess is maybe the best way to put it, and knows other people in the media. So far that has worked for me, and, you know, hopefully it'll continue. So in Las Vegas, fortunately, I haven't had really any issues so far.
I have to assume then that you're not betting the same kind of money that they are. I mean,
well, no, I'm definitely not betting Billy Walters type of money. No.
Now the NBA is well known for letting its stars get the benefit of the doubt in foul calls by referees. Kobe Bryant, for example, is far more likely to be allowed to travel without getting a whistle than a rookie would be. Does this make it easier or harder to handicap the games?
I mean,
or am I wrong on this?
No. I think there's definitely some truth about it. It drives you nuts as a sports bettor, but I guess I've been doing this for so long, I don't let that get the best of me. To me, more so with that, it's just kind of the randomness of games. That's why I enjoy basketball the most, because it's the most, to me, it's the less random of the big three sports, because, you know, you're going to have an NBA game, they're going to score 200 points. You know, one basket is 2 points, 1% of the game. Football, you know, the totals in the NFL are now around 50 or 45 to 50. So one touchdown, or, you know, let's say a team is driving, they get down to the goal line, they fumble, the other team picks it up, goes 99 yards, scores a touchdown. That, to me, that's a very random event in a game, and it's a 14-point swing. So, you know, for a side or a total, those events can be, it's kind of in the middle. And baseball, to me, is why baseball probably drives me crazy, because, you know, you have umpires that are calling balls and strikes, which they're not the players deciding the game. And baseball, you know, you have a total of 7 or 8, and let's say the bases are loaded, 2 outs, a guy hits a shot to the gap, maybe it goes out for a home run, that's 4 runs, that's half of a total. And it changes the game. Maybe it's caught at the warning track, so it takes away 4 runs. So, you know, a matter of a couple of feet changes the whole complexion of that game. So it's really the randomness of certain sports that would kind of drive me crazy.
For a recreational bettor, let's say betting $100 a game or less, which sports books in Vegas are the best and why?
You know, I would say any sports books where, you know, you can go in, you can get a couple drink tickets, maybe earn some comps with that. You know, a $50 or $100 better, it's probably not worth it for them to drive around and get the best of a number when you're talking about, you know, a nickel or minus 105 or minus 110 on a 3 or something like that. So there's definitely some sports books that offer that. So, you know, to me, it's more about just kind of enjoying your bet and you're enjoying watching the game at certain places.
All right. So now let's say we're a knowledgeable gambler who wants to bet $5,000 or more per game. Which book is best here in Vegas and why?
You know, I've never had any issues whatsoever with Cantor Gaming, and they have taken the biggest bets in town as far as I know. And it's really just the bigger hotels with that, MGM Mirage. The ones that can take and withstand or have more volume, I guess, is the way to put it. So generally it's just kind of the bigger hotels. Like I say, I've never had any issues whatsoever with Cantor, and they'll take a very, very fair bet.
How big will they take?
Again, it all depends on what you're playing. I mean, if you're playing an NFL side, I mean, essentially they'll take, you know, 50 to 100,000 on a total. They'll take less. I've done very well with the total. So generally with totals, I'll have to go to, you know, about as many places you can kind of around town to get down on a bet. Again, that's the nice thing about doing NBA and NFL. Places will take much bigger bets on those things.
Do you bet soccer at all?
I do not. I know nothing. To me, soccer would drive me kind of crazy with one goal meaning so much. But I know that's a growing sport, and I've talked to some people. And yeah, there's some huge limits in soccer, but I know nothing about the sport, and I have no interest in doing it. I have my hands full with everything else I do.
Well, no, the reason I'm asking is because there have just been massive cheating scandals all over the world where, you know, a lot of money has gone into buying players and throwing games, and they made so much money doing it in soccer that, you know, a recent show I saw, I think it was on HBO, might have been Real Sports, you know, these syndicates are now moving, you know, putting pressure on, I hear, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. You know, there's a lot of money in fixing games, and I'm just wondering if that's anything you take into account, that if it's anything that worries you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had the NBA scandal, 4 or 5 years ago with Donaghy, the referee. Stuff like that obviously bothers me. But, I mean, to me, the professional, especially in the professional ranks, I mean, you're always going to have that more, or a chance of that more to happen in college because those players are not paid. But, you know, with the money they make in Major League Baseball, NFL, in NBA, it's really I mean, I just can't see how it's worth it to really get involved in any kind of that. So I feel like everything's pretty much on the up and up with that. Again, the only thing you worry on that is would be a referee or an umpire or something like that.
Well, yeah, and yeah, you're right. But that would certainly be a place to go. Also, I didn't think NFL linemen made that much. I mean,
yeah, they well, yeah. I mean, certainly. They have a shorter span of a career. I mean, that's where it would happen, but I mean, you know, that would be, yeah, when you're dealing with 53 players on a roster and not 12 like an NBA and where, you know, one or two players in the NBA dictate kind of the action. Yeah, I mean, it could happen. I don't lose any sleep over at night that it's going to affect me.
Sports.
You worry about one of the problems with, you know, betting sports is that you don't have a way really to quantify your edge. I mean, do you worry that you could wake up next year and your edge be gone and not know it? And, you know, like Vulgaris blew a huge portion of his bankroll basically when his edge disappeared.
You worry about it basically every week. You're always worrying about it. Fortunately, and that's kind of the key. I mean, the way I was doing things 10 years ago, I would not be successful today. The way I was doing things probably even 5 or 6 years ago. And even now, you know, I'm working on things or ideas that I'm not even using, but hopefully it'll lead to something that I can use in 2 to 3 years. So it's really, you just have to evolve, and the market is definitely tighter. Like, you know, I've gotten more into the totals, which is the over-unders. I've had, you know, huge amount of success with that, just because the market is softer in those type of things, and it's a little bit more work to get down on those things. And yeah, I worry about, you know, those becoming tougher to beat in the future. So absolutely, Richard, it's you're always kind of concerned about that.
sportsmemo.com at your company. What happens there?
Yeah, it's a sports from a Vegas perspective. We have a daily podcast, daily blog, et cetera, et cetera. I got involved with that website in 2004. It was a couple years after I moved to Las Vegas. I used to have a daily radio show and did numerous radio shows around the country. It was, you know, I started as a handicapper, and it was just a process for me, and for whatever reason, I got into that, really basically selling advice and selling opinions. I liked the process of doing the radio show, and I did a lot of writing 10 years ago, and you never knew what it would kind of lead to. You know, I've met a lot of great people and contacts through that. You know, currently, I do some writing at ESPN.com. I've done some writing for Grantland. Again, I do a lot of different shows. I leave that the media avenue kind of open for me. But you know, as I've stated, I've grown to be a much stronger sports bettor over the last 4 or 5 years. So eventually, something will kind of clash in that department. But you know, this summer I was talking to a number of clients that I've had for 5 or 10 years. I mean, frankly, in the tout business, guys don't keep clients that long. I've been able to do it by, you know, being an honest, a good guy in the industry and having a strong track record. So, you know, again, where it all leads to, I'm not sure. But, you know, I feel we have a very good website and put a lot of great content out there.
Now, is that a conflict of interest for you? I mean, I assume if you're going to bet a game, you get your money down before you release your picks to your clients, right? And so, I mean, do you bet enough money to move the line? And if so, doesn't that hurt your clients?
Absolutely. You know, the art is to be able to bet and not move the line. So I've been able to do that very well the last 2 or 3 years.
Huh.
Now, there's a number of these touts, betting services, that sell picks. Every one of these services claim to have much better than average results over an extended period of time. Some sites make guarantees, such as, if our picks don't make you money, we'll give you our Super Bowl pick for free, which, of course, is a rather worthless guarantee. I'll be happy to give people my Super Bowl picks for free if they give me $1,000 for coin flip picks. Now, nobody regulates these claims. If even half of the tout claims were true, every sports book in the world would be broke, because these guys are allowing all their clients to win. So if a bettor wanted to pick a site to use, how can he weed through all this excrement to find the pony?
You know, it's a very difficult process, and certainly there's a lot of tough avenues to go in that. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, you try to see some sort of track record for at least 3 years. You have to have some sort of form that they're monitored by a third party. Maybe they have a posting form on their website, so you know that the record's being posted. You know, there's not guys complaining, well, this guy bragged he went 4-0 last night, and for whatever reason I went 2-2. So, you know, you have to find that. I think, like I said, you have to find a guy that can hit. And yeah, you'll see outlandish claims where guys hit 75-70%. I think on my website, you know, in the NFL, over the last 8 or 9 years, I've been able to hit like 56-50%. I mean, that's a gold standard. You can make a lot of money and can do really well. In the industry, it's hard to really advertise that, because 95% of the people don't really understand that, and probably a good portion of them probably shouldn't be sports betting to begin with. So, you know, again, you just try to find some documentation that their plays are legit. And, you know, are they – you can find some sort of content, their written analysis, their analysis – on a radio show or a podcast, do you agree with what they're talking about? So those are a couple of things I guess you could do.
All right. You have won and placed well in some handicapping contests. There was $100,000 contest 8 years ago, which is a nice payday, even though I think you only got $80,000 for winning. When you handicap for a contest, is it different than handicapping in the real world?
A little bit. I mean, it kind of depends on what lines you perhaps are using. I mean, you know, just to use the Super Contest at the Hilton, now the Westgate, for an example. I mean, they used to put the lines out on, I believe, a Tuesday or Wednesday, and you had till Friday to put your plays in. So obviously in 2 or 3 days, those lines are moving, and they're not. So you could kind of use the angle where, you know, you're trying not to take a bad number. And, you know, let's say, you know, Tom Brady's out in those 2 days. You know, you might not be betting that the Patriots are against the Patriots at the current number, but, you know, in that contest, you're sure the heck are going to use that stale number. So that's an example. Or, you know, maybe you're just getting a really good number in a contest, an extra half point, where you would use that and you wouldn't be betting that. Those are just some of the simple things that kind of come to mind. Or, you know, you could be in the Super Contest and you don't have a shot at winning it, so you might not want to even go and put your picks in or put any time in it. Or you're right in the money, you're in the top five, you have a chance of cash, you might want to spend a lot of your week trying to come up with the winners for that week. Whether it would make a difference or not, I don't know. So I guess those are just a few of the examples you can use for those.
Well, another thing that would occur to me is you know, rather than trying to pick the winning team, you also, you know, for example, if you're behind, you would want to pick
Yes.
the opposite of what everybody else is going to pick so that you can, you know, swing them, you know, win your side and they lose their side, right? I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
It's almost like blackjack tournament strategy.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're in the Super Contest and, you know, you're going to be in the money, you're going to probably throw in the Sunday night game either way, just so you have a chance to hedge out perhaps in the end. Some guys would take that. So yeah, there's if you think about it, there's a lot of different things you can do on it.
If our listeners want to get in touch with you, certainly they can go through sportsmemo.com. Is there a better way to contact you?
Yeah, anything through sportsmemo.com. Actually, I will be on the like I said, the old Hilton, the LVH Westgate has a Superbook seminar tomorrow. And I think they have a college panel and two NFL panels, AFC and NFC. I'll actually be previewing this year's NFL. I'll be on the panel tomorrow. I think it starts at 7 o'clock. Everybody's free to attend. Again, that's at the new Westgate. So I'll be down there tomorrow night before and after the seminar. Be happy to talk with anybody.
Well, good. Do you know anybody else who would be on there, was on the panel by any chance?
The guy that's on my panel, one of the guys actually won the Super Contest last year. Another guy is Todd Furman. I believe he does some gambling stuff with Fox Sports. And I think JT the Brick, a radio host in town, is the one kind of going to be asking us the questions and that. So that's my on my panel. I know Steve Fezzik's on the NFC panel. He's won the Super Contest a couple of times. So, yeah, it should be a pretty good turnout and, like I say, a chance to be in a sports betting environment and meet some people tomorrow night.
All right, that's good. All right, we're talking to Aaron Renning. We're going to do some commercials now. We have a couple more questions for Aaron, if Munchkin can think of some, when we come back from the commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. In August, every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 3 a.m. to 11 p.m., you can earn, if you earn 200 points, you spin the wheel in their $400,000 swipe, spin, and win giveaway. Prizes include up to $50 in free play. Booby prize is 2,500 points, which is worth $7.50. This wheel is random. In past years, it wasn't. Now it is. They're also giving away $600,000 this month to penny slot players. This adds about 2% to the return of the games. There are several penny progressives must hit by, or some of them. Adding 2% changes the strike number. And so this can make sense to go play them. We'll be starting video poker classes beginning September 10th, Wednesday afternoons at 10. This will be in the Grand View Lounge this year rather than the showroom. I'll talk about that more as we get closer. At the Palms, they're having a drawing every Friday night. 10 winners share $10,000. You earn 5 times entries Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. to midnight, 2 times entries all day Sundays and Tuesdays. You do not have to be present at the drawing to win. You need to claim your prize before midnight or you forfeit. Any player who enters a Friday drawing prior to 6:45 on Friday enters $10 in free play on Saturday. Play for points Monday through Friday. From now until next Friday, August 29th, the prizes are for Albertsons grocery stores. You earn at 0.25% if you're video poker players, 2% if you're a slot player. This Saturday, there is a $50,000 slot tournament you can earn your way into. Between midnight this last Monday night through 10 a.m. Saturday morning, you need to earn 2,500 slot points or 40,000 video poker points to qualify. The tournament itself will begin noon Saturday, August 22nd. First prize is $20,000. Prizes go 100 deep. There is an optional $50 second entry that you can make when you sign up. Assuming there are fewer than 1,000 entries, which is probably a safe assumption, paying for the rebuy is a no-brainer. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these are the best games in a casino, so practicing on them on the site can make sense. They have daily, weekly, and monthly contests. The weekly contest this week is the triple play version of Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coin per line game where periodically you're dealt 4 cards and the 5th one is declared a Dream Card, which means the best possible card given the first 4. So 4 of a kinds, dealt full houses, royal flushes, and other good hands are much more common in this game than they are in regular video poker. But you pay for this because you're playing 10 coins per line rather than the normal 5. How often the Dream Card comes about depends on the game. In Jacks or Better, all 4 of a kinds pay 125 coins, so Dream Cards come about frequently. In Triple Double Bonus, 4 of a kinds pay 250, 400, 800, 2,000, or 4,000. Dream Cards come about much less frequently. No special strategy is needed to play Dream Card. If you know how to play the base game, you know how to play Dream Card. And the return for playing 10 coins per line is always higher than playing the game at 5 coins a line without the Dream Card possibility. All right, next week we are having an interesting show, one we've never had. It's going to be dueling attorneys. Bob Dersessian, one of our favorite lawyer guests here, and I, Nelson Rose, who's also been on the show several times, are both going to be here. And Richard and I are going to toss questions at them and let them debate. And if they're agreeing with each other, we'll move on to another subject. And if they're disagreeing with each other, we just might let them go at it for a while. So Richard and I are expecting to learn some stuff from this. Hopefully you will too. Now we're actually, even though you'll hear the show at the normal time, we're taping it Monday night due to a scheduling conflict for Professor Rose. So we're actually looking for questions to ask them. So if you think you have a good question to ask the two attorneys and can get it to us by, say, noon Monday on the 25th of August, it has a good chance of making it on the air. All right.
And you should mention you can email those questions to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or post them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge.
All right. Good. All right. So back to Aaron Renning, sports bettor, sports handicapper, and radio personality.
Right. So speaking of the radio, do you still have an ongoing radio show?
No, we do not. We do a daily podcast on our website, again, sportsmemo.com, where generally we just break the games down from a betting perspective. You know, for instance, tomorrow we'll have a guy on there talking about all the NFL preseason games and try to give his opinions on which way and which to side with that. So, no, we haven't been on air. And I do numerous shows around town still. So it's always it's good, and I always look forward to doing a little radio around town.
I'm just that's kind of amazing to me. I know how much work it is for Bob and I to do a weekly show. I can't imagine doing a daily show. So, are you on the show every day, or is there a group of you who?
Yeah, we have a
that duty.
Yeah, we have a group of about three or four guys. I used to, when we were on every day, I would do the show every day. But you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, just doing all this work and having all this knowledge about all these teams. So really there's no preparation for it. I just get on there and you'd ask me about a game, and I would just talk about it for a minute or two, kind of what I'm thinking and talking about the team. So like I say, it's just as far as all that stuff, writing and that stuff, you have so much going on in your head, it's pretty easy to just kind of let it roll.
In your free time. Yeah, it's easier for him to say. All right, we got about 30 seconds before Richard takes us out of here. The rules are different in the games, say, 10 years ago than they are now. How much old data do you factor into your models in your brain?
Very little. I mean, you know, you look for maybe some, you know, I don't want to say trends or things that have happened maybe the last 3, 4, 5 years, but a lot of that stuff in the marketplace is really etched out because you just have, you know, all this computer power and you have all this knowledge. Like I say, that's one of the things that I have going for me is I just have, you know, I've been doing this for so long, I have a pretty good feel, and I try to almost think outside what a computer would take in on certain data. But it's more of a, everything just happens so fast, it's more of a season to season process than, you know, using data from 5, 10 years ago, I guess.
All right, Richard, why don't you take us home?
All right, as I mentioned, you can send us your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. If you want to get our show delivered to you in your sleep every week, you can sign up at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, richardmunchkin.com, or if you want an archive of every show we've ever done, you can go to bobdancer.com. All right, Bob, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Aaron Renning. Thank you, Richard Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com. and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.